Spirit Guide Underground, March 29, 2008.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads at www.spiritblade.net. Speaking of lots of cool downloads, that's part of today's updates.
Update information.
Okay, first off, I started working on a new song this week. I think the title is going to be Silence. I scrapped a song for Dark Ritual that just wasn't working. It was originally based on a little-known kind of ancient hymn that thematically worked with what was going on in the story, but once I got it, you know, once I kind of unpackaged it and started really looking at it and how it fit into the story, it didn't feel right. It felt out of place. And so I decided to scrap that one, and luckily I felt kind of inspired and motivated, and some ideas were clicking for a song to put in its place. So what's interesting is that early on I thought that the majority of songs in Dark Ritual would be adaptations of ancient hymns or little-known hymns or something like that to kind of go along with some of the theme of the story. But it's turned out that I think, gosh, now only maybe two songs contain material from ancient hymns. Maybe three. But or two and a half, because one of them I wrote an entirely new like a different chorus for and whatnot. But anyway, you know, it's only two and a half out of seven songs in Dark Ritual. They're going to end up being based on some earlier work, which originally I wanted to do that because it would lighten my workload a little bit, my creative workload a little bit in putting songs together to get Dark Ritual out. But anyway, it's actually working out for me to have a brand new song, and I'm really excited about it. So I've been inspired to be working on that this week. That's coming together pretty quick, and I've also discovered I'm going to have to re-record some of my lines for a really intense scene that Merrick has. You know, I listened to it, I was getting ready to mix it yesterday, and it's a really emotionally intense scene. Physically, Merrick's been put through the ringer, and I as I listened to it, you know, 2 months now removed from when I recorded the lines, I just listened to it, I was like, ugh, that's not it. It's not, you don't sound ragged enough, Peter, you don't sound just defeated enough, you know, so it was a difficult scene to record, so I'm not terribly looking forward to recording it again, but it's something that I really feel like needs to be done. Okay, so I did mention that part of the updates was about the downloads. There's a new commentary, part 7 of the ongoing Spirit Blade commentary I've been working on is now available at the media page of spiritblade.net, and I've also added an interview that you may have heard. It was my interview with Michael Bryce Jr. a few months back here on the podcast, but I just sliced that interview out of the context of the podcast and uploaded it to the media downloads page. And I've also put like an entirely new layout for the media page, so it's a lot easier to navigate. So if you want to go there and you want, you know, a documentary about the making of Spirit Blade, there's a documentary section. If you are interested in cast interviews, there's a cast interview section. And if you're interested in my commentary, there's a section for that. I've also got two other sections, one for bonus materials and one for promotional materials. So hopefully you'll find that a lot more easy to navigate. If you visited there before and just looked and like, oh man, there's a ton of crap here and I don't want to sift through this, give it another visit, because it'll be a lot easier to navigate now, and you can find hopefully what you're interested in a lot faster. So that's it for updates. We got a lot of stuff to talk about in the main feature today, so let's jump into it.
Feature.
Okay, let's talk about movies a little bit first. Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, the screenwriters behind the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, Dark Horizon reports that they are going to be bringing The Lone Ranger to the big screen. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the pair are on board to help Jerry Bruckheimer and Disney bring the character back for a new generation. It seems like a little while ago there was a comic book that I flipped through of The Lone Ranger that was kind of like a revamp on the concept and made him darker and just cooler. So hopefully they'll take that kind of approach. I've never been a particular Lone Ranger fan, but you know, I'll dig a good vigilante movie. Also, you can check out www.superherohype.com in the news section for some updated links to the viral marketing campaign for the Batman Dark Knight movie coming out this summer. There may be some spoilers, I don't know. I try to avoid that stuff right now because I feel like trailers reveal too much and too many leaks get out. There's just communication with the internet is a great thing, but sometimes it can really screw up some movies. So if you all want to check out the viral marketing campaign, go to superherohype.com and do some snooping around. I've heard that all the viral sites have been updated recently with new cool stuff. Emil Hirsch, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name, but he's the guy that's starring in Speed Racer. He is Speed Racer in the movie Speed Racer. And he has a little video review that I saw on, I think it was Comics to Film that I checked it out, and he talked a little bit about the upcoming movie. He said that, I mean, he spoke glowingly about the Wachowski brothers. I mean, he did all the things an actor should do when they're, you know, advertising their movie. He said that the tone was serious at times. He said that the movie overall had an unusual, unique tone, that it was serious sometimes, then it would be campy, then it would be for a moment, is this serious again, or are we not being serious? Or he said also that it's got visuals like no one else can make, and compared it to the first Matrix movie, that the first Matrix movie was just this mind-blowingly original kind of thing that we'd never seen those kind of effects for. And he's saying that Speed Racer is going to be the same way, that it's going to have a bunch of new kinds of visuals and effects that we've never seen before. We'll see. I thought that the Wachowskis kind of chickened out and didn't do the work they should have done on the second Matrix movie. They used CGI to do some fight scenes when they should have stuck with the bullet time regular camera action to capture those bullet time effects. They went to all CGI, which is kind of lame. And you know, the trailers I've seen for Speed Racer look kind of cool, but one thing I'm kind of jaded against the movie, gotta tell you, because I heard a while back that the Wachowski brothers basically heard from Joel Silver that the best way to really make a lot of money was to do a kids movie during the summer that would have some appeal for adults, because then the adults who would pay for their own tickets would take their kids and, of course, pay for their tickets to go see this big, fun family movie, you know? And so that was kind of their motive, was the almighty dollar. So, you know, you got to make a living, but anyway. Dark Horizons also reports that Dennis Quaid, Tyrese Gibson, and John Tenney are finalizing deals to join the Screen Gems thriller Legion. As reported by the ultimate source on this is Variety. Now, I had not heard of this movie at all, but it's scripted by Stewart and Peter Schenck, and it's a thriller, and it casts Bettany. Let's see, who is that? I didn't see who that is. I must have cut that out of the notes I copied over. But anyway, the Archangel Michael is the only one standing between mankind and an apocalypse after God loses faith in humanity. Man's lone hope rests with a group of strangers who must deliver a baby they realize is Christ in his second coming. This movie sounds like a mess. I mean, it might be cool and have some cool visuals, and I'll probably check it out, but boy, how many times have we seen these kind of end-of-the-world or apocalyptic-type movies or anything that has to do with the Book of Revelation, which you know that the writers don't know what they're talking about when they refer to it as the Book of Revelations. It doesn't have an S at the end. I don't know. It's a little pet peeve of mine when movies called the Book of Revelations. It's one revelation. Anyway, it'll be interesting. You know, it's kind of interesting to me that that people kind of look at the Bible and they're like, we don't really know anything about, you know, how the end of the world is going to happen. And we do know some things, and we certainly know that there's no indication that Christ is going to come as a baby, or that Michael is going to be, I guess, holding off God or something. It says, Michael, the only one standing between mankind and an apocalypse, that, like, God is going to lose faith in humanity and abandon the world. Well, you know, God really doesn't have any faith in humanity. That's why Jesus came and did what he did, because he knew humanity couldn't pull it off themselves. So anyway, you know, it's whatever. It'll be interesting, but, you know, I once again kind of sigh and smile and roll my eyes a little bit at Hollywood and their kind of look at adapting biblical concepts to the big screen. All right, David Icke, he's one of the producers behind Battlestar Galactica, is going to be producing a Children of Men TV series. And that's right, Children of Men as in the movie Children of Men, directed by Alfonso Cuarón in 2006. That movie departed a lot from the novel, apparently. This is what Dark Horizons had to say about it. But the new show is expected to follow the original work much more closely. And David Icke says, this is from Dark Horizons again, it's really taking root more in the origins of the novels, in that it will focus on the cultural movement in which young people become the society's utter focus. Much like our culture, whenever Lindsay Lohan does something and it becomes the headline of every news show, it's about how when you don't have a responsibility to the next generation and you're free to do whatever you want, where do you draw the line? End quote. So it sounds like kind of an interesting interesting movie. Icke also says it's going to question how society defines responsibility, freedom, and a sense of values when it doesn't necessarily believe humans will survive as a species. He says, it's a very compelling, I think, human question that science fiction has always explored extremely provocatively. It's not really a war show like the movie was. It's more an exploration of that issue. This sounds like an interesting TV show, that because it looks like it's going to tackle human nature, and I feel like oftentimes we have this public, a cultural idea that man is basically good, that we are really, we lean towards good, we're generally good. And it looks like this series would basically explore some ideas that are contrary to that. That that we are not necessarily just naturally good. And how do we handle responsibility? And what do we do when the chips are really down and life is coming to an end? What do our instincts really lead us to? Okay, so here's your TV information as far as like what shows are coming back after the writer's strike and stuff like that, and when they're coming back. So here's the quick and easy on that. Lost is coming back with 6 episodes in April and May, and 16 episodes in their next season in 2009. Heroes will be returning in the fall with a 22-episode season focusing mainly on the idea of villains. Battlestar Galactica, April 4th, there's going to be 8 episodes, then 8 more to finish in 2009 with a possible Caprica spinoff. Now, I read this in Wizard, Wizard magazine, that there's going to be a Caprica spinoff, but it seems like more recently, maybe before they printed, you know, put that to press, I heard those rumors about the Caprica spinoff kind of quelched. So I'm not sure if that's really legit or not. But I do think I'm glad that they're not just going to stop with 8 episodes. I heard a rumor that they weren't going to finish the storyline because of the writer's strike. So I'm glad that they are going to, even though we have to wait till 2009, I'm glad they're going to finish the story appropriately with its last season. Smallville, I don't watch this one, but y'all may want to know. Smallville, April 17th, is coming back with 5 episodes, and Wizard reports that Lex Luthor is going to kiss 2 different girls. Oh my gosh. You know, once again, the show sounds like it's a whole bunch of Dawson's Creek and not near enough Superboy. And what I mean by that is I don't need him to be in the Superboy costume. I don't even like the idea of Superman being Superboy when he was younger. But just not enough. Anyway, I'm not going to get into Smallville right now. Supernatural is returning April 24th with 4 episodes to close out the season. That's a show that I was I may go back and check out the DVDs and catch up on and follow. It looks kind of interesting. The Justice League movie, we're jumping onto movies now. The Justice League movie was slowed down a lot by the writer's strike, according to Wizard and George Miller, the director of the project. But now that the writer's strike is over, they're going to be able to do the rewrites and the tweaks and stuff that he wanted to do. And it looks like it's amping up for a 2009 release, which would be cool. I'm a little bit nervous because that sounds really soon, and I don't know. I'm just afraid. I want it to be good, but I'm afraid it's going to suck. We'll see. Star Trek, May 8th, 2009, bumped from December. And I reported, I think, last time, because I'd read somewhere that it was because the executives thought that they could make more money as a summer release. But Wizard says that it was more about J.J. Abrams feeling like he needed to make rewrites on the set to the adjustments to the script that he couldn't do during the writer's strike. And so that's really what this is about. So I don't know. Either way, I'll be glad if it's a quality movie, which I'm really hoping that it is. Watchmen is done filming and is prepping for a 2009 release in post-production now. And again, that's Zack Snyder, who directed 300, that's helming Watchmen. So I'm really looking forward to that. If you haven't read the classic graphic novel Watchmen, check it out. It's a very cool adult kind of story about what would superheroes really be like if they existed in the real world, what would have to be psychologically wrong with people to actually put on a costume and go fight crime. It's a great dark story. I think you'll really love it. G.I. Joe is prepping for a 2009 release. According to Wizard, the confirmed cast includes Dennis Quaid as General Hawk, Marlon Wayans as Ripcord, and there's a rumor that Ray Park will be playing Snake Eyes, which I think would be interesting, but poor guy, I hope he, you know, doesn't have big aspirations to have speaking roles because he doesn't seem to get many of them. So let's see here. The rest of the cast of G.I. Joe is mostly less known actors. I would list off the names, but I don't really know them. It says where they're from, but it's mostly TV shows and stuff like that that the rest of the actors are known for, which I think is cool. When you use a property like G.I. Joe or comic books and stuff like that, to use less well-known actors because they're really jumping into these kind of cultural icons, and it's better to not have well-known actors, you know, in the way. That's Brad Pitt. That's not Superman. You know, I mean, we don't. Yeah. Boy, that would be a terrible fit, wouldn't it? Okay, so the summer comic events that are coming out. Marvel has Secret Invasion, a massive Marvel crossover that focuses on the alien race known as the Skrulls, which are like these shape-shifting, super-powered people. And they're going to be invading Earth. Apparently, leading the invasion will be a bunch of Skrulls that have been posing as Marvel Universe characters, I think many of which are superheroes. Now, I don't follow Marvel except for, you know, reading every once in a while something online or something in Wizard Magazine, so I couldn't tell you all the details of it. But it's going to be, I guess, a big upset for the Marvel Universe, because I think the premise early on was that everybody that died and came back to life is potentially a Skrull. They kind of wanted to revamp their continuity and maybe recognizing kind of the comic book device that people never really seem to stay dead. And so they wanted to kind of add a little bit more impact. I think Marvel wanted to, from this point on, give impact to character deaths when they really happen and basically say, okay, we're not going to be bringing people back from the dead anymore. In fact, all the people that had died and come back before, they all are probably Skrulls in disguise. So we'll find out in the Secret Invasion big event this summer who's a Skrull and who's not, and it's supposed to involve the whole Marvel Universe. So it looks like the art's going to be great. It looks like the writers behind it are top-notch, so what little I know, anyway, of the DC Universe and some of the writers that are over there. So if you're a Marvel fan, I'm sure you are chomping at the bit, and if you're kind of a casual Marvel fan, this might be a great point to kind of jump on board and see what's going on with the Marvel Universe. Oftentimes, these big events make great opportunities for new readers to jump in and kind of check out the status quo of the universe and see if they want to continue reading. I did that with Civil War, pretty good story, not good enough to make me a Marvel fan. So I'll probably get the trade paperback, though, of Secret Invasion. So that starts in April 2008, that's when the first issue comes out, and it's reported by the people in charge of that story that lots of Skrulls will be revealed in the first issue, instead of like waiting till later in. There's going to be lots of reveals in the first issue, so you might want to check that one out if you're at all interested in Marvel Universe. Now, the DC Universe, this is my universe, of course. Final Crisis is the big crossover coming up this summer. I've not been terribly impressed by the Countdown weekly series that's been leading up to it that involves, you know, a lot of characters in the DC Universe. Not quite as good as 52. It's still interesting and definitely, you know, interesting enough for me to keep picking up, but I'm not going to be getting a weekly series, you know, after this one's done. This is my last weekly series. Could use that money for other things. But this apparently involves Darkseid defeating all the other gods, which may happen at the beginning of Final Crisis or may happen at the end of Death of the New Gods, which is on sale right now. 7 out of 8 issues have been released, with one more to come out before Final Crisis. Darkseid is going to defeat all the other gods and targets the DC Universe next. And when I say gods, if you're not familiar with the DC Universe, that's the New Genesis and Apocalypse gods, not like the Greek gods. Or maybe he will. I don't know. Maybe it is going to target all the Wonder Woman's gods and stuff like that. So, but after he takes out all the other gods, he's going to target the DC Universe next. So it's going to be another big crossover that's going to involve all the characters of the DC Universe. The plan here, this is what I'm most interested in. The plan is to revamp Darkseid and the other, at least the evil new gods, maybe all of them, to be more powerful, more godlike, and a lot scarier, you know? And I've seen that, you know, in the animated series, that Darkseid is not as powerful as I'd like him to be, like in the Justice League animated series. And I certainly felt like way back in the Superman animated series, that when Superman beat up Darkseid, it didn't feel quite right. It didn't feel quite right. I like Darkseid. I like the idea of him being a lot more powerful than Superman, to just be really big and really scary, you know? And there's one person commented, I can't remember the author, but somebody commented that's working on Final Crisis, that it seems like even Batman can kick the crap out of Darkseid nowadays. So I'm all up for a story that's going to revamp the new gods, revamp Darkseid, make him bigger, powerful, and more scary. That sounds great. And that series starts in May of 2008. Wizard also had an interesting little bit in their comic blog section. Greg Rucka, or Rucka, I'm going to say Rucka. It's how you, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name, but on his blog, reportedly, he says, "I believe there are absolutes in the world, that there are issues of right and wrong and of good and evil, and that writers in particular are obligated to work with these ideas in some way, shape, or form, no matter how lightly." I don't know anything about Greg Rucka's spiritual life, if he subscribes to any particular philosophy or religion or whatever, but that's an encouraging thing for me. I feel like a lot of creative people have jumped onto the American pop spirituality bandwagon that says that, you know, what's true for you is true for you, what's right for you is right for you. And here Greg Rucka is saying, you know what, there is a right and there is a wrong, and we have a responsibility as writers to deal with those issues and essentially, you know, to make our readers think. So hats off to you, Greg Rucka. That's really cool. And then just personally, on a personal note, Green Lantern 29 just came out this month, and it's a great jumping on point if you're interested in checking out Green Lantern, because it's an origin story. It's going to run for, I don't know, several issues, but the first part of that story came out in Green Lantern 29, so check that out. The comic book Flash is still on watch, in my opinion, but it's improved by Mark Waid's departure and not having any kids in superhero suits this most recent issue, although they almost were. Wally, before he was going out the door, was like, oh, I better get the kids, it's time to fight crime. But then he came up with some excuse to leave them at home. So thank goodness. I hope he continues to come up with those excuses, because I don't ever want to see those kids in costume again. If I do, I'm not buying the issue. DC, you've been warned. I've said it before. Because I'm sure you're listening to this podcast. I'm sure that you're just always the first to download and listen to this podcast, right? Right? Yeah.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word about God stands forever.
Okay, today as we search for truth, we're looking in the book of Acts, chapter 14. Now, things started out great for Paul and Barnabas as they spoke to the people of Iconium, but the Jews who didn't believe them started a smear campaign against the two guys. It's interesting to note that they embittered the people against Paul and Barnabas, not against the ideas they were teaching. That's what the text says, that was against against Paul and Barnabas. This could have been for any number of reasons, but it's a pattern I don't think that we should imitate. The most productive religious and philosophical discussion is going to come about, I believe, when we criticize ideas and not people. It's one thing if you're evaluating someone for a job or position, you know, then obviously the person and their character qualities and qualifications, you know, are going to come into play. But when you're just talking about ideas, I think it's a distraction to start talking about people that, you know, are a bad example of a Buddhist or a bad example of, you know, whatever the religion may be. I think it's the ideas that we need to discuss, not the people that follow them. God continues to use miracles strategically, not to show off, but to validate the words of his messengers. He does so in a pretty exciting way. When things got too hot in Iconium, Paul and Barnabas escaped a lethal stoning and eventually arrived in Lystra. Now here, during another speech, this is where God effectively uses a miracle here to kind of display himself. God somehow allowed Paul to see, in some sense, the genuine faith of a crippled man. And God's response through Paul was to heal the guy who had been unable to walk since he was born. And can you imagine this for a second? If someone was blind for a couple of weeks and then healed, that's another thing. There's room to say it's a hoax, or maybe, you know, it's the guy never, you know, was blind, or it's, you know, whatever. Or just have some doubt for one reason or another. But someone healed from a condition they've had since birth would have been an undeniable display of God's power. I mean, imagine someone you've known that they've not been able to walk their whole life. And it's undeniable if they get up and walk that something wild happened. For other examples of this kind of healing, you can check out John 9:1 and Acts 3:2. Here's something that's interesting. A local legend of this community said that Zeus and Hermes once visited the town and were recognized by only two people. So it's no wonder that the crowd was anxious to worship and identify Paul and Barnabas as gods, since they didn't want to make the same mistake that they believed their ancestors did. But Paul and Barnabas, of course, tore their clothes. It's a cultural expression of anguish, and they protested the idea very wisely. And Paul is so great at this. He really takes the time to know the cultures that he's talking to. I think that's something that should challenge us Christians today, to get to know the cultures that we're talking to about Christ, about the truth. So wisely, Paul made an attempt to appeal to the community's value system. The Phrygian culture of Lystra worshipped the mother goddess, who they believed provided fertility to the earth. And Paul aims to redirect their worship here, explaining that it is God who has, despite their lack of belief in him, expressed his love and kindness by giving them the fruitful seasons they've enjoyed. Now here's something interesting. Ever wonder what the Apostle Paul and Wolverine have in common? Well, not much, but in at least one instance, Paul was rapidly healed from fatal injuries. When the crowds at Lystra were turned against Paul, they stoned him, and thinking he was dead, dragged his body outside the city. And that could not have been a pretty sight. Stonings, these things, there was various methods involved in stoning, but all of them are brutal, cause many broken bones, caved in skulls, all kinds of just horrific damage. But while Paul's allies stood around him and watched, the guy gets up and he walks right back into town. Now, the book of Acts is silent on what went on in town that night before they went to Derbe the next day, but archaeology suggests that at least some of the Lystrans maintained the view that these men were gods. A plaque was discovered listing the date of Zeus and Hermes' second visit, which corresponds to the estimated time of Paul and Barnabas' visit. So there seems to be no doubt that the people of Lystra saw something astounding that made them believe they had been visited by gods. Once again, archaeology supports even the radical claims of the Bible record. You know, God isn't going to, offer us, I don't think, absolute proof, because he wants us to trust. He wants us to have faith. But let it never be said that even for miraculous things, there is no evidence in archaeology. I think this is some really compelling stuff. You want more information on that? Check out the Zondervan Pictorial Bible Dictionary, page 497. All right, so finally, Paul and Barnabas return to Antioch, where they stay for probably a year or more. Although there is still some debate, it is widely believed that during this time in Antioch, Paul wrote the book of Galatians. So, next week, we're going to take a break from the book of Acts. Don't worry, we are coming back to it, definitely. But we're going to, for a few weeks, see what Paul has to say in his first letter to Christians. We'll spend a few weeks moving through Galatians, and then we will return to the book of Acts right where we left off afterward. For more information on the cultural, historical details mentioned this week, you can check out the IVP Bible Background Commentary for the New Testament, a great resource that helps you understand the culture and gives you a sense of greater context when you're reading the New Testament. They've got one for the Old Testament, too, which I'd also highly recommend. Next week, is Paul a wacky fundamentalist? Well, we'll see if he is or if he isn't next week in Chapter 1 of Galatians. The coffeehouse question this week: what do you personally think it means to be tolerant of someone's religious beliefs? This is a very popular word that I don't think we talk about much in terms of defining it. What does it really mean to be tolerant of someone's religious beliefs? And, you know, I think in one sense, there is a dictionary answer to this, and I think we'd do well to look that up. But, modern culture also can take words and kind of give a cultural meaning to them. So in that sense, there's a lot of answers that we're going to get on this that I would be interested to hear. What is your view of what it means to be tolerant of someone's religious beliefs? And when are we being intolerant of someone's beliefs? Give some hypothetical examples. I'd be really interested to hear kind of what the feeling is out there. You can do that by visiting Spirit Blade. Oh, what is it? Well, you can leave a comment at spiritblade.typepad.com. You can email me at Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net, or you can record a message at patersbrain.blogspot.com or pater.libsyn.com. I'd love to hear from you on that. Again, we'll be back here looking at Galatians next week. Okay, that's going to do it for this week. Oh, sorry, I just had to stretch there. I am going to race downstairs and finish cooking up the chili I've been working on so I can feast on it and be healthy and strong to devastate my gaming group tonight in our DC Heroes game. Oh, and I also got that expansion for Road to Legend, for Descent. The expansion's called Road to Legend. I got it this last week, and it is awesome. So once again, just a little tip there to check out the Descent board game if you haven't. I'm geeking out over it. Anyway, that is it. I will see you here next week, hopefully. Thank you all for listening. I got nothing. This is where the show always falls apart. Okay, I just give up. Y'all have a great week. See you next time. Till then, seek the truth.
Santa is awesome. Peter is a crazy freak.